Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. Wow, that was Jailhouse Rock, and I wonder who that could have been by, as if we all don't know. The King himself, Elvis Presley. And we have tonight, well, it is tonight in some places, where I am in San Francisco, it's still like almost evening, about 5 p.m. Our guest is Patrick Lacey. Patrick Lacey is a frequent guest on Coast to Coast, and I want to tell you that he may be one of the world's leading experts on Elvis Presley. He has spent more than 10 years researching, writing, and talking to some of the most credible and incredible sources in the strange, claim-filled world surrounding the myths and legend of Elvis. Patrick is an author. He has written Elvis Decoded. And I want to let you all know that if you go to our description page, you're going to see the picture of his book, which I love. It's scrolling back and forth, back and forth. You can click on that and buy it through Amazon.com, which I hope you do, and Patrick hopes you do. And also, we were featured today on Blog Talk Radio's homepage. And I want you to know I am so excited, really and truly. We have a co-host who actually, now sit back and take this one in, was born on the day Mr. Presley died, which just kind of freaked me out. And even I think I wrote Patrick, I think he might have gotten a little bit eerie out by it. Let's bring her up, and then we're going to bring Patrick right up. Hey there, Shamin.
Hey, how are you?
How are you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. What an exciting day we have.
Oh, I know. It most certainly is. Lots of fun going on today, and It's a great day to sit down and talk about Elvis. So many people just totally into Elvis and knowing all that good stuff, and I'm just kind of like looking forward to talking to him and sitting.
Yeah,
there.
We're gonna
be mad at him for dying on my birthday.
I know. You know, when you told me that, I just couldn't believe it. I thought, oh, she's lying.
I have to sit down and think, because every year they say, and it's been X amount of years since he died. I'm like, yeah, I know. It was my birthday. I can't ever forget if I wanted to.
Well, now, wait a minute. Could you be reincarnated? Do you play the guitar, you mean?
Oh, no. Don't play the guitar. Don't do anything like that, you know. I can carry a tune in terms of singing. I can carry a tune.
You can carry a tune.
I can carry a tune with singing. That I can do.
All right. Well, that's good enough. You know, I had so much more to actually tell everyone about Patrick, but I always get kind of freaked out kind of just reading it, and I much prefer the guest himself to kind of introduce himself and tell, and I'm so excited because I did hear him on a couple of shows, and he is fascinating, and I'm going to, if it's okay with you, Shamin, I'll bring him on board.
Wonderful.
Hey there, Patrick.
Judy, yes, I'm here.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here. I hope I live up to your very generous comments.
Well, you know, I kept them brief because I want you yourself to tell us the most important ones, reading and hearing from you yourself. I think that is more important. If you know, what would you like to share? If there was something like just a brief something or other. I mentioned your book, and actually, Patrick, it is scrolling back and forth on the description page for anyone that would like to purchase it. And, well, you know what we should do is just start by telling a little bit or asking you a little bit about your background. What got you going with Elvis?
Well, back in 1992, 1993, I was a casual fan of Elvis's, you know, no different than a lot of people who like music and are aware of Elvis's music. And in 1994, I was sitting around having drinks with a friend of mine. He said, you know, you ought to go to Graceland this summer for your vacation. And I was getting married that September, so my future wife and I said, you know, let's go to Graceland, see what's up down there. And I had no expectations whatsoever. Either pro or con. It was just something interesting to do that I hadn't done before. And we got to Memphis in about 13, 14 hours, much longer than we thought. And we were driving down Elvis Presley Boulevard towards the house from the highway. You're driving south at that point. And I saw the Lisa Marie, which was Elvis's airplane, over on the right. And about 50 or 100 yards down the street, you look up the hill to your left, and the mansion is set back from the road there. And something happened to me at that moment where I became, it's hard to explain, something clicked inside me, and I've been doing something Elvis-related probably almost every day since, and that's coming up on 15 years now.
Gosh, it's almost like you were destined to do what you're doing because you know so much about.
Well, what's interesting about a lot of Elvis fans are like me, where something just clicked in their brains one day, and they just attached themselves to this man, for lack of a better description.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, a lot of people don't, you know, do the research that I do, but, you know, they listen to his music, they watch his movies, and they do this stuff all the time, and it's an important part of their lives. And like I said, I've just been doing it, I mean, almost every day for 15 years now.
My gosh. Well,
yeah.
You know, I know when I wrote you that Shamin Canton, who is our co-host, had actually been born on the day he died. You went, no way. You know, it's like, how is this? Well, it freaked me out a little bit.
Yeah, that's
and,
pretty funny.
And even
when she tells that story at parties, then she's giving away her age.
Yeah, that's why I don't tell that story.
Okay.
All that often. I said, I'll share for the show. I said, I'll go ahead and share for the show, for the sake
right.
of the show. But I try to ask, yes, it happened to have been my birthday. What birthday it was, I will not tell anybody.
All right, no problem.
But, well, I was young at the time. I should really not do it. But maybe 10 years ago, I'd been more likely to do it. But to get to a particular age and
yeah.
You know how us ladies
right.
get, we get to the point we're not talking about it.
The ladies will not. Well, I know that. Well, did you actually meet Elvis, Patrick, or not?
No, I did not. I was a little bit too young.
You were too young. Did you ever meet his wife or any his daughter, anybody kind of connected with him very closely?
I mean, I've met a lot of people in my, you know, in my travels through Elvis world.
Sure.
But I didn't meet any of them back then when he was alive, no. I was, I think, 9 years old when he died.
Oh, you were just a baby.
Yeah.
Wow, that's even stranger in a way, you know, for you to kind of have taken on this very, you know, kind of wonderful role, actually. He's so loved all over the world and always will be, I think. And here you are with all the missing pieces. You know, we all have our ideas about what about this and what about that. And I think you have the answers.
Well, I hope that I do. I certainly try to.
Well, it sounds like, you know what, and I have to say that I agree with you about what you're talking about in terms of coming into it a little bit later. I will admit this much to you. I wasn't much older than you when he died. I wasn't much older than you were.
Okay, we're narrowing you down now. By the end of this interview, we'll have your age.
You'll have my age soon. And I wasn't much older, but I kind of had the same thing happen to me, but my experience was with the Beatles. By the time I got to be totally into the Beatles, they had long since broken up, and I was just discovering, you know, Sgt. Pepper and Rubber Soul and and all that kind of thing. And when you come into it, you're right about that, something that clicks in you. It just does that click for you. And I think the same, you know, when you said that, that really kind of spoke to me. But Elvis is really that major icon, you know, of rock and roll. He's a major, if not the icon.
Well, I think that he is the icon. I was talking to a friend about this just today, as a matter of fact. There are degrees of fandom and where you like a band or an artist or an actor or whatever. Elvis, I think, is the devotion and the love that people have for him, I think, is different and rises to a different level that is extremely difficult to really put into words and to identify, you know, what makes it that. You know, you can look at a band like the Rolling Stones or the Who or the Beatles or any bands like that that a lot of people really love and you know, collect their stuff and all that kind of thing. But it's more of, with Elvis, there's something extra to that pushes it beyond that. And, you know, if you ask an Elvis fan to explain that, they'll say they really can't.
Sure.
Whereas most people, you know, if you're a fan of Tom Cruise, you can probably explain why you're a fan of Tom Cruise. But with Elvis, it's very difficult to explain that extra step where you go beyond what would be just a typical fan. And I admit that that's me, too.
That's you.
But a lot of Elvis fans would say the same thing, I believe.
Is there any evidence that supports the claim that Elvis Presley faked his death?
Cause there's a lot of that stuff. Because when you have a death, you have somebody who's so far, who was such an icon, you know, and so identified with a musical genre, rock and roll, the king of rock. You know, that's how come with, you know, Michael Jackson had to say king of pop. He couldn't say rock.
Right,
no.
Sure.
So he had to do that. But there's been lots and lots and lots of stories about that, about him faking his death. And there's just kind of things, you know, we call the urban legends. But, you know, I'm sure you know all there is to know about that, too.
Yeah. I mean, over the years, I guess we can probably go back to the early 80s or so when that started. And there have been alleged sightings. There have been alleged recordings. People have claimed that he called them on the phone. People look at the spelling of his middle name on his gravestone, which a lot of people who believe that he faked his death point to that spelling because it's a double A in Aaron as opposed to the single A that he used for much of his life. And there was a Lloyd's of London insurance policy that was never cashed. And so people look at that and they say, they say, well, you know, he didn't cash that or his family didn't cash that because it would have been insurance fraud.
Oh, that is strange. Why wouldn't it have been cashed?
Well, this is an interesting point here because a lot of the people who claim that Elvis is alive, and I don't mean any disrespect to those people, but they really haven't done the research. And they haven't done the research outside of the prism that they look through these things in, which is Elvis is alive. In that respect, they take a lot of the information and they filter it through a belief that they already have.
Okay.
So that when the facts come out the other side, they're more leaning towards that belief as opposed to what the facts indicate. Now, the facts indicate on this Lloyd's of London policy that he was interested in the policy, but that it was never purchased. Therefore, there was no policy to ever cash. And another interesting point to this is that if you look into the financial records of Elvis Presley Enterprises and his estate after he died, mm-hmm. Vernon did accept money that would have been based on Elvis's death. The income was there because Elvis died. And the people who make the Lloyd's of London insurance policy claim haven't done the research. And they haven't looked at the fact that Vernon did take in money, which eliminates that Lloyd's of London claim.
Wow.
Because he did take money based on the death.
Did. Okay. Well, you know, these are the kind of facts that we need to know because so many myths and all this stuff, you know, surround him that nobody knows the truth. We've got to have somebody that studied to really know. Now, you know, if he were found alive today, would the estate face fraud charges or not, Patrick?
I believe that there would be a lot of legal questions that would come up because when his death was announced,
right.
For instance, that following week, a lot of people went out and bought Elvis records. And you'd have to ask the question, then, did you buy that Elvis record because he died? And a lot of people would have to say, yes, I did. Elvis Presley himself would have been enriched by the announcement of his death. His estate, Elvis Presley Enterprises, would have been enriched. Certainly his daughter, his ex-wife, the people who work there. Memphis as a city, as a tourist attraction, has benefited from this.
Because if
Elvis didn't die, then Elvis Week in August would not exist. And Elvis Week is a key to Memphis revenue for hotels, restaurants, everything. So who would have to answer for that, for all the money that people spend when they go into Memphis? Because if Elvis faked his death, they wouldn't have been going there. Or rather, if he didn't fake his death, they wouldn't be traveling to Memphis every August. And if if you sit down with a pen and paper and say, well, you've got, let's say, 30,000 people every summer that go there. Let's say they spend $500.
Sure.
We're going into the millions of dollars every summer that is spent based on the fact that Elvis Presley is dead and these people are visiting his property. Because he's dead and his grave is there.
Yeah, fascinating. I never thought of that. Oh my God.
Now some people say, well, the estate lets you come up to the grave site for free for certain parts of it, and therefore that puts a little bit of a gray area into it. But that's required by law, though. They have to let people up for free. That's not a decision that they made.
Oh, okay. Oh, so they don't. What about guards? Do they have guards around the grave, or do they have any?
They have video. I'm sure they have video surveillance so that nobody touches things, and I'm sure there are certain alarm systems and such on parts of the property so that people don't go where they're not supposed to go. Sure, yeah.
But if Elvis was in danger, weren't other people around him also in danger? I mean, it wouldn't have been just him, would it?
Well, there was a lot of people say that Elvis was working with the government and that he was a federal agent at large.
Mm-hmm.
That is completely false. But what they say is that there was this thing called Operation Fountain Pen, which was a lease buyback arrangement that Elvis and Vernon got into to sell one of his airplanes. It turned into an FBI operation because the people who were on the other side of the table dealing with Vernon and Vernon's attorney for the estate, you know, started looking a little shady and they weren't making payments. They weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Okay.
So the people who support the idea that Elvis faked his death say, well, Elvis was in danger because of this case, and therefore he was put into witness protection. And they say that he was put into witness protection on the 15th or the 16th. I mean, obviously, they planned it for the 15th because I think it was going to be presented to a grand jury in Memphis that day. And in the FBI files, it mentions the date of August 15th is when this is may be presented to the grand jury. But if you do the research, you'll find that the grand jury was not presented this case until October of that year, 77. So the August 16th date falls apart then. The people who support the fake death no longer have a reason to put it on that date.
I'm really curious. Now, exactly what, again, is the Operation Fountain Pen?
Yeah, so he got into this lease buyback arrangement to sell an airplane or to use the airplane in such a way as a business move so that he would not be losing money on it as opposed to an outright sale. But what's also interesting about this is that people say that Elvis had to escape this and go into witness protection and fake his death. But it was his father and the attorney who were intimately involved in the case. Elvis owned the airplane, but he was not involved in the day-to-day dealings with this. So if Elvis had to fake his death, why didn't his father and his attorney?
Yeah. That would make more sense. I mean,
right.
He wasn't – it was just pretty much – his name was involved, but he didn't get involved in terms of the nuts and bolts of the whole thing. Everybody
right.
would have to go to witness protection if that kind of people around.
Right. And you would also have to ask the obvious question, is that if the government took Elvis away and put him into witness protection, why did they also fake his death?
Yeah.
Why didn't they just fake his death?
Yeah.
Nobody would have been looking for him.
And, you know, one of the things that you mentioned to me is kind of like the medical professionals, why would they risk their careers and livelihoods on this hoax? You know, I mean, their whole life would have been on the outs.
Right. I mean, like the one of the heads of on the autopsy team was a gentleman named Dr. Eric Muirhead.
Mm-hmm.
He was a world-renowned cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
He, and I don't, no offense to Elvis when I say this, but he didn't really care how Elvis died. He was charged with finding out in the autopsy.
Right.
So it could have been a drug death. It could have been a heart attack. Elvis could have had a stroke. Dr. Muirhead had no interest. He was an disinterested party in this because he was a doctor.
Right.
He has to stay unbiased, and he has to do his job, which was to find out how Elvis died.
Right.
So when you look at all the medical people that were involved in this, the people who say Elvis faked his death, I would go to them and say, how did all these medical people get on board with this? Because if you count the people who were in direct contact with the body that afternoon, it goes well over 100. And then if you move into the next day and the next day when the funeral took place, you're getting into the hundreds of people who had direct contact with that body. And the suggestion would then have to be that all those people that saw him either didn't recognize that it wasn't Elvis Presley or they were involved in the hoax. Those are the only two choices.
Right. And what about Priscilla Presley? I never heard her name even brought in, and probably it shouldn't be, you know. I mean, she probably was totally innocent, and she's actually the one, I guess, that kept the foundation going and got all the money going. But would there have been any, you know, like intimate people that would have said, oh, you know, this would make me a lot of money? Or I mean, have you gotten into that part of it?
I haven't, only because let's just hypothetically say three people sat down one day with Elvis and said, we have to get you out of here. Your life is in danger. We have to put together a hoax death, and we're going to spirit you off to a deserted side of Hawaii where you're going to live out your life. And let's say Elvis Presley says, okay, let's do it. For something like that to be put together, you would have to assume then that nobody else was involved.
Okay.
You know, that the people who were involved kept this secret, never told their wives or spouses, and if the National Enquirer came to you and said, I will give you $50 million to expose this plot, you still would say no. And the fact of the matter is that day, that body was exposed to too many people, visually, working on the body, at the Memphis funeral home, everywhere, that had to have been the body of Elvis Presley. Logic tells us that. And if it wasn't, then everybody was involved in a hoax. Or everybody is really blind and unaware of who they were working with, who coincidentally happened to be the most famous and recognizable man in the world.
Yeah.
So it's logically and theoretically impossible that body was not Elvis Presley's.
Had to be him. Okay. So that kind of puts to sleep all the myths that Elvis is running around someplace, like you said, on some deserted island, which I think would be hard for him.
Well, you know, I tell people, you know, I have discussions that like we're having right now with people all the time, and I get emails from people who believe that Elvis faked his death. A lot of them get very angry with me for pointing this stuff out.
Right.
But I always come back to them and I say, you know, show me the evidence. If you believe that he faked his death, let's see the evidence. And nobody has ever brought forth any evidence that has any credibility to it and can be proven and actually indicates that a death hoax took place. There's nothing.
Nothing.
Zero. There are people who come to me and say, well, how do you explain this and how do you explain that? I will be the first to admit that there are weird things You know, like, sure, the spelling on the gravestone. Why did the grave get spelled wrong? But was it really wrong, or did his father want that spelling? So there's explanations to a lot of things, but a lot of people just don't accept the explanations because they want to believe in the death hoax.
Right.
Well, how is it?
Else. They really want something else, and they don't. They won't hear anything else.
Right. It comes down to a matter of belief.
Yeah.
That's what it really comes down to. Yeah.
You kind of get people to get something in their heads, and that's what they believe. And you can throw logic at them all day.
Right.
All you want. It's not going to change their.
It won't change anything
right.
with them. But I think that because of the fact that the things that happen around, when you said about the medical thing. On that and that and the number of people that would have to be brought in. And generally speaking, when you have something like that happen, I think you really want to have a tighter and more controlled circle if you're going to try to get – if somebody has to go to witness protection, you don't involve, you know, like 300-400 people.
Yeah.
Right. And that brings up an interesting point, too, because if they had to do it where just two or three people put this death hoax together, they would have said, we're going to control this, and we're going to take him, we're going to, you know, ship him off to Hawaii, and then we're going to tell the public that he was killed in a skiing accident.
Mm.
And we can't find the body.
Exactly.
Mm.
They could have gotten him out of the country and out of the public eye.
Sure.
Any number of stories that we hear of regular people and that we hear of celebrities all the time about things that happen to people. They could have just said it was an accident, Elvis has been killed. God, this is terrible. This is tragic.
Right.
But they didn't do that. And so if you were going to go to somebody and say, how would we hoax a death, this would have to be the worst possible way to do it.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
I mean,
like, Morrison took off, you know, Jim Morrison took off for Paris, wait a minute. They never found his body. Nobody ever saw it. Wasn't that it?
They hadn't seen his body.
I think his the girlfriend and the doctor, I think, saw the body. But Morrison and Keith Moon and a couple of other people, a lot of these stories of deaths of celebrities have a lot of the same components, where you have a question about who was there, when was the ambulance called, were there drugs involved, you know, who's hiding things. A lot of these stories play out in very similar fashion.
That's true. That's true. They do. They have these kind of things, and they're kind of shrouded.
Yeah, and there's very little difference, you know, when you get right down to it, between the Elvis story and the claim that Jim Morrison left and lives in Africa.
Yes, that's true.
That kind of thing.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes I wonder, are people trying to keep the people they love so deeply alive at times, or, you know, it gets a little confusing because everybody loved Elvis so much that it's hard to kind of, for me, to say, well, maybe they're trying to keep him alive, you know, the king of rock and roll and all that.
Yeah. Well, you know, when John Kennedy was assassinated, I don't remember who said it, but they said that people don't like it when ordinary things happen to extraordinary people.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So that when Elvis died, and he died in his bathroom, more than likely of a drug-related problem. They don't want him to have died like that.
No.
So a lot of it maybe has to do with the psychological fact that they don't want what happened to have happened, so they want to change the facts.
They want to change. But now let me ask you, Petra, what brought about your book? I've got to know. Elvis Decoded. I mean, what was it, that title? And everything about that kind of intrigues me. What would have... Did you kind of get that same kind of go through you feeling that you were supposed to sit down and write that book, or what happened?
Well, when I was right after 1994, when I became immersed and I was starting to read, you know, every single book I could get my hands on, as I got, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 books into my reading, I started noticing that, you know, person A made one claim, and then about the same situation, person B changed one of the facts. And then person C told the same story, and then two of the facts were different. So that when you're at the end and you've read all these books, you've got a lot of different facts, you've got a lot of different contradictions, you've got people who have made innocent mistakes, and you've got people who I believe have made intentional mistakes. And so that as I was going through these books, I started making notes, you know, in the pages of the books or in a notebook, and that process of making notes about what didn't make sense or what was wrong became the book.
I see. That's fascinating.
Well,
so you were the
a lot of things to get involved in, because you're talking about something that this is nonfiction. And what kind of, I mean, what? How long did it take you to write the book, and what kind of research did you do? How extensive did that have to was your research?
Well, when I started doing this, I was just contacting authors, contacting some of Elvis's friends, contacting people in the Elvis world who were who would be considered to be in the know, and asking them, you know, what about this book? What about this claim that you made? You know, you've made this claim, and then, you know, 10 other people have made an opposite claim. Can you help me out? A good number of people were helpful, and they said, you know, well, here's my rationale for that error. A lot of people, you know, told me to jump in a lake, didn't want to talk about it. But I did a lot of research. Once the book came together in that type of format, I really started getting more into the medical stuff. What happened at Graceland that day is a big chunk of my book, because that's one of the most confusing parts of this story. And I just really started to piece things together, like, you know, a mystery or a puzzle, to find out what was right and what was wrong, so that if somebody made a claim, I look at it within the context of what's supposed to have happened. Mm-hmm. Does the claim stand up when you look at it closely? Some do and some don't. So, I mean, since I put out the book, though, I've done way more research on the medical and the death and the autopsy and that kind of thing.
Wow.
So there's a lot of stuff to do out there. It's just a matter of getting out there and do it.
Well, do you have people, are they basically helpful, or do you have people kind of want you to go away and dissolve? Or, you know, what kind of reception do you get when you start doing research like a detective? You're really getting into...
Yeah. Elvis information, a lot of people hold it very close to the chest.
Yeah.
And they don't want to share it because they think, you know, well, I know something you don't, and...
Sure.
And I don't want to tell you. But people can have their reasons for not telling me any reason they want. I mean, it's their business, not mine. But if I go to them and I say, you know, I want to ask you questions about this, most people are very nice whether they say yes or no.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Like I said, some people are not nice. But that's okay. That's part of what I do.
Right.
So it's okay.
Right. Especially when you're getting into this. Because people do have the, you know, the thing is, when it comes down to fandom, and fandom, you've got, it's just almost like another, I don't even know what to say, it's almost just like another level of an emotional level for people.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, that you have the sports fans, you got your music fans, and
people
who are very diehard, and there are a lot of people that, for them, Elvis was kind of the soundtrack of their lives.
Right.
And certain moments in their lives, certain songs of him, songs that he did evoke certain feelings for them, or time, or a period of time. And when he came out, you know, when he first came out, and, you know, he was in the 50s when everything was that real purebred, you know, whitewashed, wonderful stuff. And he was shaking hips and doing all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He was really just, you know, he was very provocative, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So, and you think about that now, and you look at it now, and it's like you say, because you see artists now, and you go, my God, that was like so nothing compared
nothing.
To what you see now.
Yeah, Elvis was tame compared to what we see now.
Oh,
sure.
God, yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, he wasn't biting heads of bats off and things
no,
of that nature.
No.
Nothing like that, but people do hold it to that point like that.
Yeah.
And did you find yourself, like, when it came down to putting it on paper now, I know having a book published is an amazing thing to do. And when you're working through it and you're researching the facts and you're going through that kind of stuff, how long did it take you? I'm a nonfiction writer myself, and I remember how long it took me to kind of deal with some of the things I was at the time.
Right.
And it's a long deal. How long did that go for you?
Well, I started really putting nose to the grindstone and I think probably 1996, and the book came out at the end of 2006. Now, there were obviously breaks in there where, you know, I would just put it away for a month or two or three, and I would work on it, and then I would come back and work on it. The problem, or not the problem, but the challenge in this, in the way that I did my book in the format that I put it in, was it's very, very detail-oriented, and since you're working with a lot of contradictory information, when you're analyzing it, it can get very confusing. And sometimes I found that I was kind of losing the thread of where I was going, because there was so much contradictory information that I really had to sit down and say, okay, what's my position on this based on these facts? And going through and looking at things like this, I mean, I didn't throw this stuff on paper and put it out. I mean, I worked on this stuff literally 18 hours a day for months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, from a nonfiction standpoint, like you're talking about, it was just very tedious.
Right.
Because it was so detail-oriented, and I had to make sure that when I put a conclusion down, that if it wasn't right, then it at least stood on its merits.
Right.
I love the cover. Where did you get that cover?
I actually made the – I created the base part of that cover, and then it was embellished a little bit here and there, but I put the original thing together. It was just – tweaked a little bit.
Wow.
Very nice. It's got it certainly does grab you.
Yeah, it does. It's almost like that cutoff line there or something. It's very mystical. I really like that. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody else put that kind of coding stuff in the back, which I thought was kind of neat too.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I'm not a graphic artist, so I can't take too much credit. But.
Well, I suppose you know what, though? You do have to give it, you know, let's give you some credit there for going, okay, you know what, I'll go with that, because you do have say over that. So it was very good taste to come along with. You know, you work with someone, because sometimes it's very hard to get your vision
exact,
especially when you're trying, because you'll have something in your head that you have, you know, that you're working with, because, you know, this is when I can tell you as a man, this is where you can understand that you're experiencing something that's very close to the birthing process when you're writing the book. It's kind of that gestation and then that birth.
Oh, we're going off on a different topic here.
Yeah.
I'm not prepared.
He's not prepared for that one.
Let me get my notes.
Birth of a baby. Well, how about if we listen to Heartbreak Hotel for a minute or two? Would y'all like that? We'll take a little break and come right back.
Cool.
Heartbreak Hotel will be right back.
Well, since my baby left me, will I find a new place to dwell? Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that Heartbreak Hotel. I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so lonely. I'll be just a lonely. I could die. Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in the gloom. Be so, be just a lonely baby, be just a lonely, be so lonely they could die. Now the bellhop's tears keep flowing, the death clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long. Never look back and think you're so, think you're so lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely. Well, they're so lonely, and they could die. Well, if your baby leaves you, you've got to tell the tale. Or just take a walk down Lonely Street to Heartbreak Hotel, where you will be. Think you're so lonely, baby. Well, you will be lonely. You'll be so lonely, you could die.
You know, Patrick, our guest today is Patrick Lacey, and he is an Elvis Presley expert, and he's written a book called Elvis Decoded. And Patrick Lacey is going to actually give out his website, so everyone can go on to it and read more about him, read about his book. If you would do that, Patrick.
The website is elvisdecoded.com, and I have posted there some stuff that I've been working on lately, and you can also contact me by email from there, too.
Oh, okay, so your email is on there. So anybody that wants to know more, that anything about Elvis. You know, I really admire you, Patrick, because you, I mean, this is, Elvis is so loved, such an icon, that for anyone to take on this subject, I really think that takes a lot of chutzpah. Is that the word? I think it's...
Oh, yes, you need chutzpah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And our co-host is actually Shameen Canton, and she also has a website, Shameen?
Yeah, it's Shameen.com. You can look, check out, see what I'm up to. You know, I'm writing. I do something completely different. I wish I had something romantic like Elvis to go with, something juicy like that to go. But I do wedding books, and I do chick lit, so have that. So you can check out and see what I'm up to, where I'm going to be. And pretty soon they're going to have a little, I'm going to be keeping up with a little tiny blog that's going to be for me.
How cool is that? And she jumped right in here, Patrick, at kind of the last minute and said, I'd love to be part of this. So we're real lucky to have her. And when she told me she was actually born on the day Elvis died, I thought, ooh, destiny. No, there are no accidents.
There's no accidents. I just get this and what have you. You know, supposed to be celebrating there. You got people going, oh, he died this day. I'm like, well, darn, some of us are born this day. Oh, God.
Life goes, and you know, Shameen, actually, she has, Patrick, three sons that are musicians?
I've got two sons. I've got twin
sons. Oh, two, okay.
Actually, the third son I have is like, I consider him adopted. He's he's their brother by another mother.
Oh.
Kind of a thing, but he's a sweetheart. They're all musicians, all of them.
Wow.
And so it's a lot of fun in my house, let's just say that.
A lot of, are they into Elvis?
Yes, they're. The one thing I have to say is that when they were growing up, I was always very open about music because I was very lucky. I was very lucky with, as far as like my parents, particularly my father and my uncle, were really big into music in the 50s, and you know, for the 50s, and my grandmother and my aunts and everybody. Mm-hmm. So I actually would listen to 33s and 78s and 45s from the 50s. So they had Elvis, they had Motown, they had everything. So I really was immersed in that quite a bit growing up.
Wow.
And I pass it on to my kids. So I really kind of, and I think the thing is that with Kim down to Elvis and him being a part, such a big part of that rock and roll,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when you think about a lot of the stuff that you see now, and I'm sure you've thought about it too, is you see like these new, the young kids coming out, like, you know, the, what are they called? The
rappers?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, the new things, these new kids, the Jonas Brothers. Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
But, these, and they come out with the movies, and you really think, they always think and make it some, like it's something new. And you think about it, Elvis is really the first.
He was.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, he did.
He was.
Movies. I mean, there was a point there that you saw more of him on the big screen than you did anything else.
Anything else? And what a voice, Patrick! Do you love his voice? His singing?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah.
I think he is a peerless vocalist.
Oh yeah.
Now, Court,
I really don't.
Did you meet the Colonel? No, you're too young. You didn't meet the Colonel.
I did not meet the Colonel. No.
No. Do you know any myths or great stories about the Colonel? Because he actually helped make Elvis in the world, didn't he?
You know, he did, and off the top of my head, I don't know any. However, in almost any Elvis book you read, there are loads of them because he was a very colorful character.
Yeah.
And he, I think Alana Nash wrote a book on him. Alana Nash is a well-known writer or author, and she's written on Elvis before. But I would recommend that book. I've read that book, and it's really good.
Wow. You know, the thing about having somebody like Patrick on our show is that very few people have taken 10 or more years, I think more, out of their lives to research facts and fiction about one of the most beloved singers of our time. And who actually, well, you know, there's so many things that he did that we will never even understand, but I really think that Patrick, you know, I put down in some of the things that I sent out, like PR, you were one of the world's leading experts. I hope you don't mind, but I do feel that you are. you have some facts that can kind of help people not keep looking for a live Elvis. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's an interesting, you kind of broach an interesting point there in that going back to the people who contact me and they get angry with me about saying that Elvis died and that kind of thing. The work that I do is intended to help people, and it's intended to help people not only understand the death, but various facets of his life and, you know, what happened around the time of his death, those last years. He did have a drug problem. That's not a debatable issue. So when I write these things, I'm not doing it to, you know, upset anybody or disappoint anybody. I'm doing it because I believe that as associates and contemporaries of Elvis's grow older and pass away, the history of Elvis is going with them.
Right.
And if we don't really step up, you know, the people who are of age to do so need to get this information in order because, I mean, no offense to the estate, but they have a sanitized version of Elvis that they promote.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't step outside of that box. And that's that's fine for them because that's a business decision. But, from a fan standpoint and for people who love Elvis and love his music and want to know more about him, the information has to be put in order before we won't have those sources anymore. And so when I write about this stuff, I'm doing it to help people. Even the people who email me and say, you know, you're a big jerk for saying that Elvis is dead, I go back to them. I say, I'm trying to help you understand about the death and what happened. Elvis did not fake his death. And so I want people to understand that I'm not the bad guy.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Of course you're not. I mean, but you're right about that history there. They talk about that. And, you know, we talk about, we really think about it now. If Elvis was alive, how old would he be now?
He would be 74.
Okay.
Just turned 74.
About that age, 74. When you think about that in terms of age, and if he was alive at this point, and the fact is that people that were his peers and his contemporaries would be around that period of time as well, be about that age.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to have, you do need someone out there to tell these stories because so many people who were his close confidants and people who were a part of his inner circle have passed away.
Yeah.
And
right.
You don't have that.
If you look at, you know, Elvis conventions and things like this around the world, oftentimes Elvis's friends and musicians from his bands and business associates are guest speakers at these things. And
great.
You can't open up an Elvis magazine these days without seeing a posting of, you know, we're sorry to hear that so-and-so has passed away.
Exactly.
And it happens, you know, month after month after month, and these people are passing away. And pretty soon we're not going to have first-person resources. We're going to have to depend on the body of work that has been put together about his life. And so, you know,
that's
going back to what I said before, is I'm trying to help in my very small way.
Sure.
To help people understand what's going on and to point out, you know, a lot of people came to me after the book came out and said, you know, God, I never really noticed that there were incorrect information or that one book contradicted another and then contradicted another and on down the line. So a lot of people thanked me for saying, you know, I'm glad that you pointed this out because I was not aware of it. And, you know, I was spending, you know, you go out and you buy a book, it's $26, it's $32, it's $18. And you want to have some kind of confidence that what you're reading is factually accurate. And like I said, we're going to get to a point where we're not going to have first-person sources anymore.
And you've got to be able to go out there. And you know, and that's where writers come into play.
Yeah.
Self who come in and say, okay, you know what? I'm going to tell the story. I'm going to do the research. I'm going to reach out to these people who are first-person resources that we can get the stories directly from them because that's important. I mean, we lose a lot of history here as things go along, as people pass away and times change and people's memories fade.
Sure.
And I really think it's a service. And it's a service in the sense that you're keeping the memory alive there to, you know, but you're really just keeping that memory alive, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of his friends especially, go out and they speak at these conventions and such.
Yeah.
And they really do a good service for the fans because you are getting somebody who, you know, was a friend of his who was very close to Elvis, telling stories, talking about Elvis as a person at Graceland and not, you know, the cultural superstar that we see in the media and such. So it's important that people get those things. And it's not like if you were a friend of Elvis's, it's not like you have a responsibility. That you are the sole person to set the facts in stone. But if you are going to write a book and you are going to talk about the facts, then let's try to make sure that they're right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. We just had someone in the chat room calling himself Elvis Expert Corey. And he says, Elvis Decoded is a unique book and look into the facts. And, you know, that's right, because if you don't give the facts, well, you're alive and you can actually talk to the people that, you know, knew him.
Right.
Who is? You
right.
know,
if I had put my book together and I wasn't confident that I had checked and rechecked what I wrote, I wouldn't have put the book out because it would have just added to the problem.
Well, that's it. Yeah. And we don't need that. You know, I wonder about his daughter. You know, I've heard her sing. I've heard her do but I really haven't heard her give out the facts about what she knew about her dad. But though she was so young when he kind of passed that I guess she doesn't really, you know, again, that's you because you're an unbiased. You're not attached. You're not going to be telling us stuff for any ulterior motive. And I think she might be more, you know, she's so emotionally involved with her own dad. And
in large part, the memories and the facts, if you will, that she has about her father would probably be very personal, and they're probably not going to be things that she either wants to share or that would add to the dialogue about her father. Because a statement from a girl who's looking at herself as 9 years old when her father died.
Yeah.
That's not the kind of information that's going to add to the biographical stuff that we're talking about now, and that needs to be put in order before we lose all these first-person accounts. Now, she may have an opinion on the people who do talk about her father, and I know some of those opinions are good and some of them are bad. But, again, she isn't a first-person source of the type of information that we're talking about here.
No, she wouldn't be. She wouldn't be, right.
Even though she could walk into the Grayson archives and probably get anything that we're talking about.
Oh, for sure.
But
Well, there are people who have actually shared some things, and I will say this is kind of like a little bit off topic in this it's on the topic but off, but I will tell you this. Given the fact that Elvis had that reputation for having quite a love of food, if you will, and his cook, the best pound cake recipe I've ever got in my life happens to be from his cook.
From who?
From his cook. It was his favorite pound
cook?
Cake.
How did you do that?
Like that. There was a recipe I found years ago. It was by his cook. She shared what was his favorite pound cake. And I saw this, right, and I said, well, you know, Elvis looked like somebody he appreciated food, so let me see what this is. And to this day, I make it every year. I've been doing it for quite some time now.
Oh, my word.
It's a favorite. It's a favorite for my family.
There are a handful of Elvis cookbooks out there.
Exactly.
Wow.
With that kind of thing. I've seen that. And I saw that recipe. It was written someplace. Mm-hmm. And it was in a magazine, I believe it was, that I found it. And they said this was the best, and their comments were it was the best pound cake in terms of, you know, texture, things like that. I'm a foodie, so I definitely went ahead and said, oh, okay, well, Elvis Presley, I said, this has got to be good. He was from the
gotta
South,
be good.
And he was from the South. I mean, and Southern people take their pound cake very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And so I said, well, you know, if this is what he enjoyed, I bet you it had to be good. And it really was. And I believe that this particular cook has since passed away.
Mary Jenkins may have been the person you're talking about.
I believe so.
Okay. You know, we have Corey Cooper, Elvis Expert. He's in the chat room. Do you know him, Patrick?
I do know him, yeah.
Yeah, I told him. I said, you ought to call him. I think I heard you and him and Gary Patterson. Go ahead.
Yeah, we did the George Norrie show, I think, back in January around Elvis' birthday. And Corey and I have also done a couple of other interviews together.
Has he mentioned Nancy Rooks, Mary Jenkins, calling?
Yeah, Pauline and Nancy were also on the staff there at Graceland.
Oh, okay.
Oh, because
I knew this stuff.
Yeah, because the night that he was going to be a guest, what happened is we had bad tech problems.
Uh-huh.
And it was too bad because, you know, it was just one of those nights. And but he actually is on board now. And I said, well, why don't you call in, be part of the show? I don't, you know, I thought maybe I would ask you if it was all right with you. And I don't know. He may not, but he is in our chat room. So we're very, very welcome to have him. And
I'm sure Corey would do an interview anytime you asked him.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. For some reason, we had a lot of feedback that night. And so what happened is I felt like, well, it was so bad. You know, I felt like, well, we should do a new show at some point. You know how things are when you're doing them live. They, you know, sometimes there's something going on we just, you know, we can't control. And
oh yeah, there's just little things. I call them, you know, you wind up with a little poltergeist, and then it just kind of hangs around there. And I believe that there's one that resides in computers.
In computers,
it's like I believe that seriously. Sometimes things happen, I'm sitting there going, you've got to be kidding me. There's got to be a little person in here just that there's whose main purpose in life is screwing around with me.
That's right. It seems like it, you know, and there's a time and season and whatever, but, you know, I was just kind of looking over some questions that Patrick had sent me, and I'm very grateful for them. But what I was looking at was really, I was wondering about that woman. What was her name?
Alice Tiffin.
What?
Alice Tiffin.
Yeah. Could you talk about her?
Well, Alice Tiffin is a woman who has come forward and claims to be Vernon Presley's biological daughter, which would make her Elvis Presley's half-biological brother. She came forward and said that she has DNA evidence to prove this, and she initially made a claim against Vernon's estate in the probate court of Shelby County, and I believe that she withdrew that case, and she's now moving it over to the Chancery Court. But her claim, you know, there was a gentleman named Dr. Hinton, Donald Hinton, who years ago came forward and said that he was treating a man who called himself Jesse. Now, Jesse is the name of Elvis Presley's stillborn twin brother.
Oh.
Now, Dr. Hinton said that he was treating this man, not in person, but, you know, over the phone or in meeting or in by mail or sending prescription medications or whatever. And he says that this Jesse was actually Elvis Presley. Now, Alice Tiffin, who changed her name to Eliza Presley, says that this Jesse character has somehow provided her, I guess, a DNA sample. I think it might be on an envelope or something like that, and that she has had this tested, and that through whatever testing they did, she is Elvis Presley's half-brother.
Oh.
There are so many holes in that story, we don't even have time to go into it. But
Wow.
A lot of people have come forward with claims like this, and I would go to any of them and say, okay, you've got your evidence.
Right.
Don't take it to the court or anything. Why don't you take it out to the public? Why don't you tell us what your evidence is? And Eliza Presley will not say what she's got. She won't show what she's got.
Oh, my God.
But there's another interesting thing here, if I could just point this out real quick. There was a woman over in Sweden who claimed to be the real Lisa Marie Presley. She wanted to go after the state, too. There's a gentleman named, I think, Tim Farrell, who hasn't really done anything, but he thinks that he might be Elvis's son. There's a woman out in California named Deborah Presley who took action.
You know what? I'm going to add some more time to our show. We're just about out. Go ahead. Let me go ahead and do this.
I can wrap up in just a second. But what's interesting about this is that in order to get DNA, let's say Elvis were alive, in order to get DNA from him, you wouldn't know he was alive, so he would have had to have contacted you. So somewhere, this is what Eliza Presley is asking us to believe, that somehow Elvis Presley is alive somewhere. He heard about her case and provided DNA, even though he wouldn't provide it to anybody else who has made these similar claims, and even though, going back to the beginning of our discussion here about fraud, even knowing that if he were to be proven to be alive, his estate would literally implode under the legal proceedings that would come about as soon as he was proved to be alive.
Okay.
He would lose his estate. His daughter would be bankrupt. His ex-wife would be bankrupt. The city of Memphis would go into a tailspin because they would lose so much revenue from tourism. And yet Eliza Presley wants us to believe that Elvis would do this, and what would be the only reason? To help her prove that she's his half-brother.
Huh.
Wow.
Now we're supposed to believe that.
Wow.
Yeah, really.
He would sacrifice his entire legacy, his estate,
right.
The well-being of every member of his family, including his grandchildren, all for this one woman who he doesn't even know, to prove that she's his half-brother.
Wow. You know what? We've got more time. Don't worry about it. I really feel like this is so important because actually we are the last generation that will be able to be the people that were involved or knew or heard him live or, you know, and I think that we really all need to speak out and speak up because Elvis Presley will not die. I really believe he's going to be known throughout history and other planets. And I hope we can kind of keep his legacy on.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, for sure. I know. He will, because you know what? It's going to stay that way because of between, you know, what the legacy that the musical legacy that he's left behind.
Right.
Of his music, just the music alone, that being what it is, and
mm-hmm.
and the impact that he's had on people's lives, and the impact that he's had on the music business. I mean,
mm-hmm.
everybody knows. And when you think about it, you really can't say Elvis Presley anywhere in the world for the most part and have people go, huh, who? Who?
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't really happen.
I mean,
no.
Elvis is part of musical culture. He's a part of fashion culture. Any artist today that you ask, you know, who are you influenced by? Who do you want to emulate? Who do you like? Elvis is going to probably come out in 99% of those people.
Sure.
It's just the way he's an American. I'm somebody, and I don't remember. Sorry, I don't have my quotes in front of me. But there's somebody who said a long time ago that in terms of, you know, Americans, we'll never agree on anything like we agreed on Elvis.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very accurate, you know, poignant thing to say, because Elvis is something that, as Americans and along with the international community, that we do agree on, we have agreed on, and we will continue to agree on, minus the people who send me emails. But other than that, you know, we're good to go. And I think that he will remain as he is right now for I don't know,
many,
a long,
many.
A long time.
And, you know, Corey Cooper, who was on my show, but he wrote in the chat room, he wrote, I encourage everyone to go to www.elvisdecoded.com and read what Patrick has on there. It's very important information that people need to read to understand the facts. So I would encourage everyone to do that because, you know, we can kind of pretend or dream, but sometimes people like, you know, people like you, Patrick, you come along and you take the time and the effort to decipher, to go in and research and really set things straight so that we're not just dreaming what, oh, well, it could have been this, could have been that.
Right. Right.
No.
You know, even if I personally don't set anything straight and I become, you know, merely a footnote in this
sure.
Elvis world,
sure.
I, what I'm hoping is that the approach that I've taken to information will kind of set off a spark in other people, specifically the fans, and maybe even people who are authors or who might be redoing a book or editing
uh-huh.
a book. And they
uh-huh.
might look at this, maybe they might look at this and say, hey, you know, this guy makes a good point. Maybe we need to look at this information a little closer and make sure that it's accurate so that going forward, when some kid is in a library in 75 years and he opens up a biography on
yeah.
Elvis, he's going to have uh-huh. he's going to have some. There's going to be some reliability that book is going to be accurate, and the person's going to understand Elvis as he really was, and not the way some people who may be biased or want to mislead you or what have you are going to present him as.
Go ahead.
I think it's important that happen, and if I can in any way get people to do that, then I guess my work is
done. Then that's a great thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
I mean, not many people would even broach this, but when I heard you on Coast to Coast with, it wasn't Art Bell, because we have a new one on Coast to Coast now, but when I heard you, I thought to myself, this guy has done his research. He's not just talking off the top of his head, but he knows what he's talking about. Which
right.
is why I felt like you were important to carry on Elvis' legacy. A lot of people talk about Elvis and bring up all the myths and all the legends, but sometimes you feel like they just read them from the headlines or the Inquirer today
You would be surprised at the number of emails I get, or I also volunteer at allexperts.com where I take Elvis questions. It
yeah.
surprises me to no end how many questions I get that are based, sometimes even word for word, on incorrect information that's either on the internet or
uh-huh.
in books or wherever these people got this stuff. And they don't. And the funny thing is that they don't ask me the question of, is this true? They present
uh-huh.
the information as if it's true,
uh-huh.
and then they ask me about the information. And then I have to go back and say, well, wait a minute. How do you know that that's true?
Yeah. Good thing to ask.
I got an email the other day on that site
uh-huh.
where somebody wanted to know. Somebody was suspicious about the fact that a whole bunch of stuff from Elvis's room was taken and it was never returned or found. And I said, well, that story's been going around for eons. How do you know that that really happened?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that? The question right there was based on something that has been read somewhere. It's not an original
mm-hmm.
question.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. And that makes it something that, well, you know, it's true. It's a good thing to be out there so people can have accurate sources. Because, you know, people do that. They read something. They decide that it fits into something that fits into whatever they have in their head,
right.
you know, with their line of thinking. So it becomes a gospel. And they will approach you that way and say, okay, well, this happened, blah, 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 blah. And
right.
won't have not one foot in fact. Not one.
Oh, not even.
Yeah, too often in the information that I deal with, belief overrides facts. And if you're given facts that you don't like, then you try to mush them into your beliefs.
Sure.
And so that you try to tweak the facts so that you can still believe what you want to believe without totally dismissing the fact. And that happens all the time with people who contact me.
Really?
All the time.
And you get a lot of people contacting you that are actually arguing or saying, are angry because you have kind of like debunked their beliefs.
I get a lot of emails like that, yeah.
Wow. And, of course, you really have researched it, so you're not coming up with just off-the-wall stuff.
Well, the way that I've looked at it is like I said earlier, a lot of the people who believe Elvis faked his death or want to believe
right.
that and are trying to work with what they believe are the facts, the people who put these theories forward did not analyze the information properly. And they put it through their filter of reaching a conclusion first, then
right.
doing the research to meet that conclusion. So that the conclusion when they start researching is Elvis faked his death. Now
mm-hmm.
let's go back and find the information to support that. What I did is I went and looked at these things, and I said, well, if somebody claims that this supports that Elvis is alive, let's look at it. Let's see if it really does that. And all the things that I've analyzed and looked at and researched, and I just don't pick out a piece of information from the internet and decide if it's true or not. I research
right.
it, and I have not found any evidence whatsoever that Elvis faked his death. And some people come to me and say, well, you know, what about this and this and this? And then
mm-hmm.
when you add that all together, I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's got to mean something. And I say, well, if you have one supposed fact that has no merit whatsoever, and
mm-hmm.
you add to it another fact that has no merit, and you add that to another fact that has no merit, that's just a bunch of zeros that you're adding up. And zero
right.
plus zero plus zero equals zero.
Right.
So there's no substantive weight of the evidence. It just,
right.
it all doesn't mean anything. And like I've challenged people who have called me
mm-hmm.
that I've talked to in interviews and on email and such, I say, let's not argue about it. Put your evidence on the table, and we'll talk about it. I mean, I'll talk to anybody about this stuff, but they got to have the evidence.
They got to have the evidence. And your book, Elvis Decoded, will this help them find out the truth?
I think it will, because one very, very key point that I try to make in the book and in anything that I've said since the book came out is I want my book and my research and my approach to research to get people to think so that even if they don't agree with me, they'll nonetheless research the information themselves. And so that when they come to a conclusion, a fact, or they're looking at any fact pattern or anything, when they decide that what they believe and this is true, they'll have some basis for it and not just I read it somewhere or I believe it. Because anything that I've presented in the book, I try to present as evidence-based and factually accurate in that it follows a logical thread so that when I reach a conclusion in the book, I got there, you know, by a valid means. I didn't just get there because I happen to believe that. There's some things that I researched in the book that I believed that turns out that I leaned another way by the time the book was done.
Wow.
So I want people to think for themselves and not just read a book and say, okay, that's the truth.
Well, that's a good thing to do because, you know, it's kind of my father's old, one of my father's favorite saying is, you know, a little knowledge is dangerous for some people.
Sure.
And for some, what actually happens, yeah, I think what you're talking about too is what you're running into is people who get a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of that, and they take what they like out of it and put it together as fact.
Exactly. You're 100% right, and that goes back to what I've said about the emails that I've gotten. They take the things that they believe or that fit into what works for them, you know, mentally, psychologically, whatever. They send it to me and say, you know, you're crazy.
Oh, no.
And I say, look at the facts.
Oh, Patrick. Well, yeah, well, that's what, you know, the thing is that they're going to get that, because there are some people who literally, because I know people who have this kind of, I know what kind of mental attitude, I know kind of what he's talking about, because I know people like this. And they swear that they know everything there is to know, but what they've actually done is just kind of glean little pieces of things from a bunch of different sources, and they basically just take what they like out of it, you know, suddenly it becomes the gospel because they pick it together.
But what's interesting about that is they can't then come forward and say, well, I believe that, and if I don't know the facts, it's because I can't find them or I've never been told them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have been told where the error in their thinking is, and they've been given the facts, and they ignore them. There was a doctor, Paul Enders, I think his name was, or Peter Enders, who wrote a brief analysis of the Elvis Underground, it's called, which is where a lot of this alive stuff comes from. And he put forward the idea that this is cognitive dissonance, where people have a belief system and they're going to stick to it no matter what. And if you give them facts that fit into the belief system, they accept the fact. If you give them a fact that doesn't fit with the belief, they discard the fact and then they move on.
Sure.
Now that's obviously a very layman's interpretation of what he said. But that is in large part what a lot of the people who believe Elvis is alive do. They discard what they don't like. And even if you tell them, I mean, I've had conversations with people where I say right to their face, here is the fact that you are ignoring or that you don't know. Please factor it into what you believe. And they'll figure some way to brush it off.
They go around.
And they'll ignore me, and then they move on with the same belief, even though they've been given the facts to take down their belief. It happens all the time.
But at least you've got them written down in a book, Elvis Decoded, Amazon.com, and people can find that through your website also. And let's give them that. Go ahead.
My website is elvisdecoded.com.
And they can find the facts, and like them or not, this particular person has researched them for over 10 years, and Patrick is not the type of person that's going to make up facts. He has actually done his work, and I feel like for history, this will live on. We cannot live off of emotions. And Elvis, let's face it, Patrick, his music, I mean, come on, it just really moved us. It opened our hearts, and it's hard for us to get into the hard facts of, you know, all the other. But I think
that has happened. Yeah, people are excited about it, and they don't want to.
Well, I mean, you make a good point there. There's a lot of the give and take between Elvis and his fans is based on emotion.
sure.
You know, emotional responses that Elvis elicits from people. And, you know, they listen to his music and they enjoy
yeah.
it. And they really don't want to hear anything negative or...
Oh.
I mean, there's another school of thought here, if I could just say one real quick thing,
sure.
that you've got the people who believe that Elvis faked his death. You've also got the people who deny that Elvis did anything bad, you know, that he used drugs or that he may have died of a drug overdose.
Oh, yeah.
There are people who put him so far up on a pedestal in that he did no wrong, in that he had to have died of a heart attack, and even if you show them, you know, talk to them about medical information that contradicts that, they will just say, nope, it was his heart.
Yeah.
No matter what you say.
Know that.
Yeah, well, I've actually met people like that once. I've met, because I think they have a hard time. They really have a hard time because it's just that they have that built up in their minds of exactly what he was, such an icon. And they've got that image of that love me tender Elvis in their head.
Yeah.
And the idea that he could have succumbed to such a thing of, you know, of something that honestly, it kind of goes back. It's kind of like what I think about with sports people, with music. It's kind of the demigods for us.
Yeah.
They're part of that kind of demigods. And when they actually find, we find them to have these human fallibilities and people just don't really, they just can't find a way to reconcile that.
Right, and also going into the emotional connection that people get with Elvis, they look at him and there's a very, very strong sense of loyalty, even though they never met him. They feel like they know him, and they need to be loyal to him, so that in their minds they're thinking, well, if I say that Elvis died because, you know, he took too many drugs, he's up there in heaven, and he's going to look down on me, and he's not going to like it. Now, that might sound kind of corny. But I think that people want to be so true and so loyal to him.
Of course.
Because they don't want to be on the side of the people who are negative about him or say things that are true but might have, you know, a negative slant to him because they're not, I mean,
right.
You know, when you're talking about a death like his, it might not sound good to some people.
Well, yeah.
No, but that's probably true. You know, I could see that. People are going, well, if I say one thing about Elvis, I'm going to be, you know, absolutely.
And maybe they don't want to open the floodgates. They want to say, you know, well, if there's 10,000 fans in my fan club, I'm not going to be the one to say that he took too many drugs. Because then the floodgates will open and pretty soon everybody will be saying it.
So you
control your own Elvis world based on what you believe, the same way that the estate controls the image.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. During Elvis' time, nobody took drugs. I mean, it wasn't like the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or whatever. You know, he was in a time when that was not really acceptable.
It wasn't acceptable, and when it happened, it was very much behind the scenes. You think about
people
you know, who were behind that because you know,
behind the scenes. And whereas now it's out in the open.
When you think about the time period, like for instance, you know, the difference between Hendrix and Morrison and Janis Joplin dying at that point, they were part of that whole 60s kind of thing there at that end where people were taking drugs and they were doing that and that free love, blah, blah.
It's okay.
Elvis was straight out of 1950s America, the Eisenhower years, you know.
He was almost, you're absolutely right. And for us to go, oh, yeah, well, Elvis took drugs, I mean, we can't not. The generation won't
Elvis,
take it.
Elvis's image, I believe, even back then, was very controlled by Colonel Parker.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that he knew that if in any way, shape, or form, Elvis Presley was looked at as a druggie or a drug user or any type of recreational use, it would put him in the category of Hendrix and Brian Jones and Keith Moon and all these guys of the 60s and the 70s. And he couldn't do that. Remember, you have to look at Elvis's fan base, you know, very much the Bible Belt. A lot of religious people like and continue to like him. And it would have been very, very risky, even for Elvis to have sought public treatment for any type of drug addiction or abuse.
That's true.
Because so many fans could have said, ugh, you know, that looks really bad. on the flip side of that, you've got fans who let him get away with the movies, and they let him get away with, you know, mediocre concerts in some parts of the 70s,
mm-hmm.
Shows that performers today could not get away with. And so
right.
they were very forgiving. So I think if Elvis had come forward and said, you know, because of this, that, and the other, I've developed a prescription medication addiction. I'm seeking treatment on
mm-hmm.
my own with my doctor's help. I think the fans would have been very supportive.
They probably
would. But I think that Colonel Parker or whomever said it's too risky. We can't do it. And then, you know, there's another school of thought that says, you know, maybe Colonel Parker was just putting Elvis out there and said, you work until you can't work.
Well, he
well,
didn't
yeah,
have that
you
kind
don't
of contract
know.
With him. Now, there was supposed to be some kind of that contract that he had with him. There was, I don't
yeah,
know,
that
story
contract.
Behind that. And I mean, you know, the other thing is, as bad as it sounds,
mm-hmm.
and we think of it more so now, but we because we don't really think about it being back then. But
uh-huh.
Elvis was definitely a product. He was a product.
Yeah, he did become a product, yeah.
And so when that happens, when you become, you know, he was a phenomenon, and then once you start to hear that wonderful ka-ching, the ka-ching, ka-ching sound starts, you can forget.
Oh, yeah, like, oh, my gosh, you're right. All that money and all that.
And there's a lot happening there. So, yeah, you were right. They really did have to control that kind of thing, and they probably really did not want anything like that to get out.
To get near or touch or hinder that product. You know, it's hard to, for people like me that heard his music and I loved him so much, you know, for me to think of him as a product. But we don't know the behind the scenes, you know, whereas Patrick has really researched. And
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up a good point because We're looking at this in almost an academic light here because we're saying, well, let's say he had a drug addiction and it was 1976 and 1977, and he
right.
couldn't seek treatment. That is that type of discussion is predicated on the notion that he had identified that he was a drug addict, his doctor had identified that, his manager identified that, and they wanted to somehow do something about it but chose, you know, a different avenue,
sure.
like the doctor weaning him off drugs or what have you.
Sure.
Now, if you look at that from the flip side, which unfortunately a lot of the facts support, a lot of people did things back then for him that were not very good. They
right.
did things to him that weren't very good, and they did things on his behalf that weren't very good, and sometimes with Elvis's knowledge. We can look back at that time and say, yeah, he may have had a drug problem, but there's probably a lot more to it than just, you know, a guy who happens to have been taking too many prescription drugs. And
mm-hmm.
based on my research, there is a lot more to it, far more than most people know.
Do you think that Elvis was given those drugs beyond his did he not want them and they gave them to him anyway, or what do you think?
I think Elvis, and what I can, and Patrick, and you can clear this up, but there also comes a point there that you have Elvis's responsibility in this because, you know, he was a hard person to say no to from some
yeah.
of the things that
oh,
I read.
Yeah.
Oh
definitely.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean,
you've got
some doctors out in California and Las Vegas, excuse me, who would give him pretty much anything he wanted. Elvis at one time, probably under the influence of drugs, had talked about buying his own pharmacy. You know, things like that. When you're talking about things like that, you
yeah.
need to step back and say maybe I'm not doing the right thing.
Exactly.
But there were things going on back then that a lot of people don't understand and don't understand the context. And the decisions and the things that Colonel Parker had to do, the things that Elvis's primary physician, Dr. Nicopoulos, was dealing with, the things
mm-hmm.
that Vernon, his father, was dealing with in his family, the things that Elvis was dealing with, all this stuff is very, very complex, and it can't be really broken down in terms of a textbook case.
No,
it's so complicated with really what was going on back then.
I couldn't agree more. And you've got someone like Elvis who was like a burning light, and, you know, he had to keep on. Like, he had a performance, he had a movie, he had to go on and on. And it's almost like he had a destiny, and I really don't know that I'm the one to put any kind of judgment on that. I enjoy his music. I love his voice. I think there is no voice quite like it. And, you know, Patrick, I really, really appreciate you coming on board tonight and sharing with us all that you know about him, and I hope people will buy your book and read more Elvis Decoded, and that is right now scrolling back and forth on the description page of our show, Judy Joy Jones Show, and also Amazon.com and your website, which is
ElvisDecoded.com.
And Shemaine, I thank you so much for being tonight with us, as you were actually born on that day.
That's what I get
on
to
that
claim to fame here.
Oh my gosh, too much! And
now,
I really
now, if you guys have anybody come on here to talk about Madonna, you know, Madonna was born on the same.
Yes, exactly.
Day.
I was going to say I'm in company with that. Timothy Hutton, Madonna, Kathy Lee, and Frank Gifford, born August 6th.
God.
Oh well, you know,
Madonna
like that. Oh yeah. Yes,
oh,
indeed.
I did.
Yes, indeed.
Ooh,
that's
right.
You guys are interesting people like that. Oh, for sure.
Do you know her, Patrick?
Go ahead.
Patrick, do you know Madonna?
I do not know Madonna.
Okay.
Cool person to know. Pick up that thing like that. I'm just sitting here this evening like, oh, wow. But
wow.
It's something. It certainly is something here.
And we're
really taking
the show tonight with Blue Suede Shoes. And if you would like to say anything more to anyone out there, Patrick, go right ahead.
I just would like to thank you guys for having me on. It was great talking to you. And anybody that's interested in the book can go to ElvisDecoded.com, link to it there. And if anybody has any questions for me or wants to talk about this, feel free to email me.
Absolutely. And we look forward to your next book. Are you working on a book?
That's kind of in the working stages, and I don't have an answer for
you. Totally understand.
Understanding of that.
We got that one.
And everyone out there, thank you so much. And Alan Levy, who actually invented and is the founder of Blog Talk Radio, we love you. We think you're a genius, and we really appreciate you having done what you did. And everyone, have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Shemaine. Bye.
Well, it's the one for the money, two for the show. Three to get ready now. Go, cat, go. But don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Well, you can knock me down, step in my face, slander my name all over the place. Well, do anything that you want to do. But now, honey, lay off your blue shoes and don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Let's go, cat! Burn my house, steal my car, drink my liquor from an old fruit jar. Well, do anything that you want to do. But honey, lay off of my shoes and don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take you over my blue suede shoe. Rock it!
So lonely.
alone.